Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.
The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC.
The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
Ball dinks in towards where Davey Rogers is up. Rogers leads the left. Oh, Davey Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davey Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up. Shane Farrell. And Shelsley 2-0.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
She gets the winning goal here. Slattery! Oh. Into the back of the net! That is what champions do. That is what winners do. Pearl Slattery.
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes! Goal! Shelburne lead!
His cross sticks the biggest!
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shells lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and it's all over!
Shelburne FC! Our first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. As always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. You may notice I am not Adam Leonard. I am back from my, a hiatus. I'm back, I'm rested, I'm well refreshed. I might not look it, but I am. Somebody else who's back from a break, well rested, back in the hot seat, nearly, is Darren Cleary. Dazzler, what's the story?
The B team is back, Doody. It's the Lee Martin, Dean Kelly of Shells.
That's being generous. Well, the Jason Byrne and Glenn Crowe Shells held the fort very, very well. And I've told them privately, but thanks to Adam for looking after it while we were away. For some reason, Dazzler, the entire media team decided to all go on holidays in one go. Maybe it was better because now we're pretty much all back. But yeah, you were on holidays, as was I. I wasn't on a hiatus before anyone says it. I wasn't sacked or anything of the likes. It might happen soon, but it hasn't happened yet. How was your break?
It was lovely. I wouldn't go and take breaks where the League of Ireland football calendar is. I couldn't. Don't know. You just feel a little bit like a dope if you did that. So I just booked the break for. It was booked for me because it was a wedding on. So, I enjoyed it. It came before the break, so I'll probably have a bit of a break now in 2 weeks. But I didn't go to the happiest place on earth, Doody. I wasn't like you. I didn't go see Goofy and Minnie and Mickey and all those lads. But it was a good break.
I will now formally dispel the myth that Disneyland is the happiest place on earth. It's absolutely not. Sorry to ruin the magic for anybody, but it's full of couples fighting over their kids. It's full of people fighting with characters over wait times and queues and the likes. So, a nice break. I could do another week off, to be totally honest, with the amount of stuff I did. But look, here we are. What I did manage to do while I was away was, well, what I didn't manage first was to see the balls game. I was actually swimming with dolphins. And as much as I tried to get out of it and reschedule it to another time, I couldn't. So I did miss what I believe was a well-earned point against Bowes. I did manage to find my way under a parasol and got to watch the Derry game on a very, very small iPad. It was very hard to make out the game, but by all accounts, a solid performance and a well-deserved point.
Yeah, it's been obviously a decent few weeks. Like the Pats game, obviously the unbeaten streak came to an end a few weeks ago, but to be fair, it has been a very, very positive response. The Bows game was just, it was well organized. They didn't really look like they could find a way through. We had a chance from a free kick. I think maybe if it had happened before Evan Caffrey came on, Tyreek took it and skied it. Kyle Robinson had a bit of a half chance as well. Like we played well, full value for the point. You could argue neither side really deserved to win it, but it's a decent little run of form. I mean, to take 4 points from possible six, going up to Derry, obviously they've had a really rough few days with the confirmation now that Colin Whelan is back out injured again, going to be out for the rest of the season, and they're having a proper wobble. It's mad to think that you'd look at Shell's away to Derry and think maybe 2 points dropped, but the manner of the performance then on Monday was really, really, really positive, very solid. So you'd have to say that aside from the Pats blip, where we actually played well in parts and just got undone by a little bit of lackadaisical defending from a set piece, it's been a decent few weeks for the men's team, and the women's team have been in flying form.
Indeed. Just on the Derry game, I have to be honest, when the teams came out, I kind of went, oh Lord, we could be not in trouble here, but there was just a lot of change. And like, I could be wrong. Somebody will probably correct me on this one. I don't think we've managed to play the same 11 in back-to-back games this year. I could be wrong, but I remember looking it up a few weeks ago and we hadn't, and I don't think it's changed. So
we were unchanged for one game. We definitely were. I think it was after we won Sligo 3-0. The next game was Pats, wasn't it? And we were unchanged for that.
Ah, yeah, see? Spoofer. Has no clue what he's doing. Hosting the club podcast. Absolute spoofer. Doesn't know what he's talking about. May as well sack him at this stage. One thing, right, the main thing I want to get your opinion on, obviously we'll have an awful lot of chatter about Drogheda. It's the more recent game. That's just naturally the way it'll go. An awful lot of conversation around the penalty and the missed penalty and the fact that maybe Shane took it and Jack Moylan didn't. And you could probably go around in circles with the argument. What did you make of it?
I think Shane's probably damned if he doesn't, and damned if he does. Like, if he doesn't take the penalty when he's the assigned penalty taker, maybe does he think then he's sending a message to the management that he's short on confidence, he's not backing himself? Like, you can tell they're trying to help him play through probably one of the rough patches he's had. Like, he was brilliant last year, was in contention for player of the year, and he just hasn't been able to replicate that form just yet. Obviously the suspension didn't help, the straight red card. He's been given opportunities to try and play his way through that. So he doesn't really have much of a choice. You can understand him, you know, Jack taking it for his hat trick. Ligo, that's probably, if you're short on confidence, an easier one to give away. But like, look, he played well in the game. He played decent the other night. Obviously, he put in an amazing ball on a plate for Sean Boyd to score the goal against Drogheda. I think there probably is pressure on Shane now to react and respond, because he hasn't been great in recent weeks. You can't think of one outstanding performance since he came back into the team from his suspension. He nearly got sent off in his first game back to the Leinster Senior Cup against Wexford. So, like, you can never slate players for missing a penalty. At the same time, do I expect them to be on the next one? Probably not, because Jack scored, Boydie has a decent record of them. But I've no issue with him taking it. I've no issue with him missing it. But I do think it's going to be a big few weeks for him, because we're seeing that there's no barrier to taking lads out if they're not playing well or hooking them at half time. Jeez, I don't know if there's any player who's been hooked more at half time than Farrell or under Duff, probably what, 2-3 times already. So it's going to be a big few weeks for him.
You said there, surely Shane Farrell's not the designated penalty taker now, is he? Surely he's behind Boyd. Obviously, Boydie's been out injured, but surely Jack is the designated penalty taker, I would have thought.
No, because that's what the manager said up in Sligo. He said Shane's on pens, and Jack said the same. And I think the manager said it after the Derry game that Farrell's the penalty taker. So,
see, look, you go away for a couple of weeks, and you just lose any kind of credibility you have as a podcast host.
Just stopped caring, dude. That's your problem.
I've definitely stopped caring. Yeah, the ship has sailed. My thing on the penalty incident is there's this new weird trend in football at the moment where whoever is not taking the penalty will take the ball. We've seen this kind of stuff now.
Mind game gimmick.
And they'll kind of walk off with the ball, or they'll stay around the penalty spot as if they're taking it. Obviously, the idea being the opposition players will come up and say, "Oh, you're being brutal," or "Oh, the keeper knows where you're going," or other players, they won't asking them what they had for their dinner just to try and put them off and get in their head a little bit. But I have an awful lot of everyone has an awful lot of respect for Shane. He's a dyed-in-the-wool red at the moment. He's a longest-serving player. He's been really, really good. As you mentioned, he's maybe struggled the last little while for form. But when you've struggled for form, and when your manager has publicly hammered you, after the sending off, the manager didn't pull any punches after the game. And to have the balls, I suppose, is the best way of putting it, to take that penalty on. And like that, at a point where it's not as if we were winning 2-0 or, we were losing 3-0 where there wasn't a major thing on the outcome. I think my respect for Shane went up an awful lot, that he did have the guts to take it and say, look, I'm going to take this on. Look, he misses it. A mate of mine is a goalkeeper at a half decent level, and he was very, very impressed with the save. That trailing leg, a lot of times keepers will drag their leg, and he had all the goalkeeper lingo, keepers are like. But fair play to Shane for standing up, and I know Monday night maybe didn't have his best game either, but I mean, the ball he put in for Boydie was class. It's right in that area where the keeper can't really come for it. Centre half, it's difficult because if you head it, you're kind of heading it back towards your own goal. And Shane took the corner or put the ball in for the Shane Griffin goal as well, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, although there was a bit of a schmuzzle before it actually ended up in the net. I know there's a large contingent of Reds who place a lot of faith in Luke Byrne every week that he's going to score at any time in the game. I think a lot of people thought it was coming on Monday. Obviously didn't, but they're big moments in games, and you need players to come up with big moments. And putting a ball like that into the box for Boydie's goal is a big, big moment. And look, big man done really well to finish it. But hopefully now that gives Shane something to cling on to. We can kind of look at that now and say, well, look, maybe if for 80 minutes I wasn't at my best, I played a massive role in turning the game on its head. So fair play to Shane. We were really good in Wexford, or in Derry rather, from what I could make out. It was very difficult to see. It was 40-odd degrees. The sweat was in my eyes at that stage. But great result up there. Brought us on to Monday. I think I was a little bit against the grain in my thoughts on Monday's game. What did you make of the game as a whole?
Just before the Monday one, I think it's... people mightn't realise about the penalty. It's much harder to score penalties in this division than it was 4 or 5 seasons ago, because I don't know if you've noticed, the league have gone big on stats. So they've got opt-in now, the same way the Premier League, the same way the Bundesliga do, the same way Serie A, to essentially capture all of the main data, management, betting companies need in real time. So all the clubs were given access to their own account before the start of last season, I think it was, Premier Division clubs. And if you go into Shane Farrell, you can see graphically his last 5 penalties, exactly where he's put them. I presume you saw the Jordan Pickford's famous water bottle with all the pen takers and where they go. The same thing is there for League of Ireland players now. So they have this resource at their disposal where they nearly need to be ripping up their penalty technique every time they get one, so that they're not found out. That's another thing I think people mightn't realize. When Farrell goes to take that penalty, Brian Maher probably has every single time he scored a penalty and where he's put it in his mind, and it'd be the same for Boydie and the same for Jack. So I think even that would tell you more probably about suppose, the ballsiness of taking the spot kick on. Like, I don't know what you think of it, Doody, if it's misleading or how the league used the stats that they use. I think sometimes it can be a little bit cringy the way they portray it, like heat maps and things of that nature. But overall, just to divert it away a wee bit, I do think, is it a good thing to have that level of stats there? It certainly seems like the players are using it.
Yeah, look, the more data you can get together, the better, I think. The only thing with it is, it's what you do with the data then is the next part of it. Some of it, I mean, like, some of it is just nonsense. Like, I've no problem saying, I think XG is the biggest load of nonsense I've ever seen or heard. And it's mental because it's so, so popular. Like, so many people lean on it and, oh, well, yeah, they might have lost 3-0, but their XG was higher than the opposition. Yeah, but they didn't score, so, like, does it really matter? I'm more interested in actual stats. So stuff like, you know, the amount of passes you made in the final third, the amount of successful dribbles players have, the amount of headers they win. I love all that stuff, but it can just go completely gaga the other way. I cannot wrap my head around XG. If anyone wants to argue the toss with me over it, absolutely no problem. I've no problem having that argument. Because, like, what does it mean? His chances of scoring, he should have scored, but he didn't.
It's like expected possession. Like, it's, yeah, just, so it's what, made, like, up.
It's a fantasy stat. It doesn't mean anything. It's like, I think a lot of the times it's a cop out for people. It's mostly supporters, in fairness. I haven't actually seen or heard coaches or anything like that leaning on XG, but, like, for pundits and supporters online and stuff like that, well, yeah, we were beating 6-0, but our XG was higher. Yeah, well, like, you didn't put the thing in the net in the end, so it doesn't actually make a difference, really, what the XG was. But no, that one about the keepers is interesting. Like, so, are we at a stage now where we can just sack goalkeeper coaches? I mean, what else? Are goalkeeper coaches not usually there just to, you know, look through all penalties and, yeah, he usually goes this way or he usually goes that way? Am I being a bit harsh there?
You probably are a bit harsh.
Sorry,
on
Skins,
coaches.
I'm only messing. I know he listens.
You're on the wind-up there.
I know he listens now. There's more to goalkeeper coaching than looking at video. I can vouch for that. It's one of those weird, weird roles that it's very, very difficult, and I'm glad I don't ever have to do it, and I've never had to do it. But yeah, I never thought of, like, it being so easy to get your hands on the data now. It's not something I would have thought of before. I just presume clubs have the facilities to do it, but obviously, with the basket case the league has been for the last number of years, most teams aren't able to get it. It's, I know there's a lot going into analysis and watching video and stuff like that, but it must be easier to do that when you already have the stats at hand, you know, where you can quickly reference it, and definitely helps. What I want to know is, what is on Davy Mack's iPad?
What is on Davy Mack's iPad?
I know his set pieces are there. I know that much. But I've also noticed Davy Mack with the little Sam Allardyce earpiece in. So, like, what's going on?
I think Davy Mack talks to the physio. So when the physio goes on and says, this player is Banjax or this player is Grand, it usually goes to someone in the backroom staff as opposed to the manager or the assistant manager. And I'm fairly sure Davy Mack is the earpiece man.
Whatever happened to the traditional thumbs up or thumbs down? Like, yeah, sorry, he's bollocks, lads, he's gone. Or yeah, they're putting your hands out from your chest as if saying, nah, he's gone, forget about him, finish.
You're just railing against modern football here, aren't you? Everything is shite. Earpieces, iPads.
No. I have a lot of time for earpieces. I know, like, some managers use it for, like, they'll have an eye in the sky type thing, they'll have somebody up in the stand or whatever watching it to get a different perspective. Completely understand that one, but yeah, that's, I never thought of talking to the physio. That's mad. I wonder how high tech it is. Like, has he got like a little button he presses when he's talking? Like, is he saying over every time he finishes talking? Like,
I don't know, but they're the only two people with earpieces. So if they're not talking to each other, I don't know who they're talking to.
They're just chatting. It's like the linos. I only learned there a few weeks ago that, like, the linos can hear each other breathing and all in their ears. That would throw me right off. I thought like the mic just picked up when they start talking, but you can hear the and that's fairly regular with the states some of the referees in this league are in.
Are we going to have a referee bashing? It's been a few weeks.
No, I don't think so. In fairness, Derry and Drogheda, I don't remember much talk of referees, was there? I miss all that?
No, Sean Grant wasn't going to send anyone else off after what happened a few days before that in Cork, where he sent about 20 Rovers players off.
Oh, jeez, that was absolutely mental. That was mental. And on that note, the whole FAI appeal committee and you're able to appeal Reds now is a complete waste of time. Because if Richie Tell, as much of an idiot as I think he is, if that red card wasn't overturned, nothing ever will be overturned. So forget about that. What on earth were we talking about that we got to hear?
I think I mentioned penalties about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, well, I'll leave it at fair play to Shane for stepping up. Look, doesn't score, it happens. But I would like to think now that Shane is going to go in the right direction, having got his assist. It's definitely not two assists. His assist on Monday night. Just before we tip into Monday in a bit more detail, a big, big, big result for the women's Premier Division side on Saturday. I didn't get to watch the game. I was in the sky at the time, so I unfortunately missed the game, so I can't give too much of an in-depth analysis on it, but a massive, massive 3 points for the girls.
Especially on the road, it's a big win, and especially after the test at Piemont last week, I thought, credit where it's due, Adam and Shauna did a brilliant job on the pod over the last few weeks. Shauna's analysis of the team, where they fell against Piemont, particularly how, you know, tactically Piemont were just had their number, were a little bit more street smart, came with a game plan, executed it well, and we were kind of looking for a bit of luck more so than any kind of strategic way of breaking them down. I thought the analysis of that was brilliant, but to come back and respond to that setback against Piemont by beating Galway away from home 2-0 again, Gemma Quinn having a brilliant time of it. Very, very inspiring story, it has to be said. Obviously gave up football, came in, made her debut at what, 31, 32 years of age. You'd think the dream is gone, and it's just been amazing, like in her attitude, application, professionalism since she came in. So it's a huge result for them. Like they're gonna need to win pretty much every single week to stay in the hunt. It's that kind of league. It looks like there'll be three teams certainly in the title picture. Like Shells, it's hard to believe they've only lost like two of the last 10, but they've been, you know, setbacks. Obviously the Wexford game was very, very narrow and could have gone either way, similar enough for Piemont. But the run of late's been really good, like to put six on Sligo, obviously beating DLR with minimum fuss and winning on the road against Athlone Town, a place that was tricky to go last season at times. It bodes well. I think it's a very, very good response. But Shauna made a very, very good point. Like on paper, you'd argue Shells are probably the strongest team in the league. They are the pound for pound, player for player. Like there's more talent in that Shells team than there is at Rovers, and there definitely is at Piemont. And where the other clubs will have probably had the number or the edge is around setup and tactics and the way that they approach games. So it's going to be particularly interesting. It's going to be an interesting few weeks. Like this game against Wexford, a good team, probably underperforming this year relative to maybe what they would have expected themselves with the players they have, the resources they had. Obviously, they finished runners-up last year. They would have been hoping to kick on. They're not in the title picture at all this year. I think that's going to be a massive, massive game.
Yeah, it's funny because after the Piemont defeat, there was a real doom and gloom kind of around. That was like, oh, there we go, we're out of it. And it felt like that at the time. And then, look, I know you're relying on other teams dropping points, but what, 6 points behind Piemont, I think it's not an insurmountable amount of points to make up. Yeah, it'll be difficult, and there's little or no room for error now, but it's certainly not. The Reds are by no means out of race just yet. And just on Sean, I know I mentioned Adam and Sean at the start of the pod, but you cannot be having that like experience, that knowledge of somebody who's done it, you know, who's put the shirt on and has played in the National League and played at the level Sean played at for so long. You cannot beat that kind of analysis, and I certainly hope to have Sean on more regularly for both ends. It's not just a women's Premier Division thing, but Sean was really, really good. I love having that real knowledge, that been there, done that, wore the jersey and knows exactly what she's talking about. So more Sean Cook. Sorry, Dazzler, might not have space for you going forward.
Good. I'd be very happy. Look, I'll sit on the bench for Sean any week because she's brilliant at what she does. Herself and Adzi have been a great partnership on the LOI TV and obviously on the pod as well. And yeah, more of them. Long may it continue. One thing, Doody, we probably should mention, and it's something that's been highlighted by across the league. There's been streaming issues with Pixalot. You know, Bowes had issues last week. We had issues the week before the Piemont game, which is unbelievably dispiriting and disappointing. And it's unfair on the players. It's unfair on the clubs involved. And, you know, I don't want to bash the FAI because LOI TV has been a amazing introduction. I think you can't look at the growth of the game in terms of gates and interest and not correlate it with people seeing more League of Ireland highlights, more League of Ireland goals, getting to know players maybe a bit more through interviews, seeing more managers through proper professional broadcast standards. And I think the fact that it's not extended to the WNL is disappointing. It's not really conducive to grow in that game. I think they deserve better. Obviously, the arrival of TG Carr to broadcast games probably does help bridge the gap a bit, but I just think at this level, I don't think Pixalot is fit for purpose. I had heard, I don't know the veracity of it, but someone had suggested to me the Pixalot system that was installed around the league to I guess, you know, continue LOI TV in 2021 or whatever it was kind of guaranteed for 18 months. The kind of technical infrastructure, the setup, the physical hardware that lives in the grounds, that lives in Talca Park, that lives in Dalymount, it's never meant to just be there forever. The technology obviously failed on us before the Piemont game, and that was massively disappointing. All you can do is apologize to Shells fans who wanted to tune in and anyone who wanted to tune in, because it's not good enough if those games aren't available to watch. But the reality is the club is not in a position, really none of the clubs are, to take on the mantle of broadcasting the games, because what that does is it creates a little bit of an inconsistency and imbalance. I'd love to see the FAI take the system that they have for the men's Premier Division and roll it out for the women's Premier Division, because I think it's needed at this point, you know.
Definitely, it's the next step. Like, if you want to really talk about growing the game, and look, there's great work being done. I'm not going to hammer, like, from now to 5-10 years ago, it's like night and day, but you have to keep pushing on. You can't just settle and say, all right, yeah, teams are getting now a few hundred people in the gate, like, that's going well. You need to push it to the moon, especially with the World Cup coming up. It just needs to be a bit better. Like, as you said, the Pixalot was fine at the start because we'd never been able to watch games anyway unless they were on TV and people were stuck at home and they were just desperate to have anything. But it's past its use by now. It just needs to be better. Monday.
It does need to be better, and like it's a massive bone of frustration for everyone in the club. Not the players, obviously, deserve better. They deserve that, but we don't have as much control over it as we want. Like, the Pixalot is a system that's administered from I think they're headquartered in the UK, maybe the United States. But when our Pixalot, we had issues with it a few weeks ago. You know, the FAI administered a system. We contact them. We flag the issues with them. They book a site visit from an engineer. He physically flies over from Leeds to come and inspect the system. He did that. He made some repairs. I'm not a broadcast engineer, so I don't know the nature of what affected it the first time. it got a clean bill of health. We were told it worked. And then, you know, the FAI do tests every Friday. So I'm not going to slam them or hammer them. They're trying their best as well within the confines of the resources that's available with them. Because I saw someone say, do you not test this equipment to see if it works? Yeah, it's tested every week. You know, it's tested by the FAI, tested by the club. There's been times where there's been issues with the system and someone's had to go down to Talca and, you know, turn it on, turn it off again, for want of a better word, try do whatever they can to remedy issues, and that's worked fine. It just wasn't possible to fix for this one. An engineer has come and, you know, replaced a damaged or non-functional component again. So we're hoping that'll be the end of it, and it'll be operational and there won't be any more streaming issues for the WNL side. But yeah, it is a source of contention. I think it's important that supporters are aware and that, you know, we're open and transparent around it, and that obviously we prefer if the system that the men's first team have was available to the women's first team, but it's under the FAI's remit and control to manage this. And unfortunately, the technology failed. I don't think I'm going to say they failed, but it was the technology failed. And when your nearest engineer is in Leeds, if it fails on the day of the game or half an hour, 40 minutes before kickoff, I mean, there's very little you can do. I saw someone say, you know, why are people only being told 8 minutes before kickoff that it's not working? It's because people tried for the last minute to try and repair it or get it operational or functional, and it wasn't. So there was someone, just to give an update before the Wexford game, an engineer came out, replaced the non-functional component of the Pixelot system, and repaired it, and has been given another clean bill of health. So we're very, very hopeful that it'll be fine and good for Adam and Shauna this Saturday.
Let's hope so. And as usual, it's a 2 o'clock kickoff in Talca. So if you can't make it down to the game, fingers crossed, it should be available as normal on LOI TV. Monday, Dazzler. I mentioned earlier on, I have a bit of a stance on the way Monday's game went. Look, I always ask you what you made of the game, so I'll shoot first on this. I don't think the first half was as bad as people made it out to be. I don't think we were as bad as it was made out at the time. I thought Drogheda were actually really, really good in the first half. They frustrated us, made it difficult for us. They nullified us, really. Didn't really let us get going or get any kind of momentum into the game. And look, scoring when they did was a bit of a sucker punch. And going into half time, did I think we were going to come back and win the game? I had a feeling we could, because I looked at the bench and loads has been said about the depth of the squad and, you know, how we've actual options this year where, look, I'm not going to disparage any individual names, but last year you're looking at the bench going, oh my Lord, if that's our option coming on, you know, we're probably in a little bit of trouble here. But like, when I flicked through the bench on Monday, Evan Caffrey, Kyle Robinson, Tariq Wilson, Sean Boyd, Mark Coyle, Brian McManus, David Torre and Cameron Ledwich were the outfielders on the bench. Like, that is just night and day to what we've had in the last couple of years. And that's what gave me a bit of faith going into half time. I was saying, look, they'll get the Duff Rocket probably at half time, come out with a different team and do the business. And that's pretty much the way it went in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear that people thought we were bad in the first half. I thought we owned the ball. I thought we didn't really create any clear-cut chances, but I sat down in Section E and it just felt like the ball was down there the whole time, the goal we were attacking into. So it was a forgettable enough first half of football, but it didn't really feel like Drogheda did much other than to try and contain us, and they did it really well. Look, they got their goal. I think most disappointing from their goal is the fact that it you know, we just didn't defend our box well enough. We got undone by a cross again, but the response is really, really positive. Like, you can kind of, I don't know if I was worried at halftime, because it's a Monday, it's a hot Monday, we're a goal down, Drogheda are just going to sit back now and make life difficult for us. But to be fair, the two changes were massive. And it's a brave enough call hooking Jad as well, because I think he's probably our one of the most technically and creative-wise gifted players we have. But he didn't have a good game, so it made sense. JR as well on his 100 appearance for the club, I think probably just wasn't where he needed to be. And those changes really gave us the impetus to kick on. Like Boyd, you just, not even what he does from an attacking point of view, but it felt like he won a load of defensive headers as well from, you know, corners, set pieces, and then even at the end when we were defending our box, like it's his all around game. Like Sean Boyd, the attacker, unplayable on his day, but Sean Boyd in the air, defending his own box, you know, trying to win the ball high up the pitch, that shouldn't be lost either, you know.
Well, Duffer mentioned earlier in the season when we had gone on that run of, well, that run is probably still going, of conceding from set pieces, but Duffer did mention that we were missing that kind of, that presence of Boydie defensively in our own box. And, I mean, he made a big, big difference when he came on. He's just a magnet for the ball in the air. I don't know what it is. Just seems to gravitate towards him. And, as you say, it's probably undersold the effect he has defensively as well. His work rate is pressing. That's not to say that the other attackers don't press or don't work hard, but Boydie just has this presence that, like, I'll put it to you this way, if you're shaping up to clear a ball up the line and out of corner of your eye you see Jad or Shane Farrell or Jack Moylan running towards you, compare that to seeing Boydie running towards you. I mean, like, I seen a photo on Monday. I was more than likely Owen Smith, because he's the greatest photographer the world's ever seen. The photo he got of Boydie squaring up to the Drogheda defender is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He's like sticking his chin out and he's, I don't know what's been going through his head, but he's just so aggressive and just gives us something totally different. I genuinely think defenders see him coming and go, oh no. Or the night before a game on a Thursday evening when players are having their last bit of grub before the next day, if they know they're facing Sean Boyd the next day, I'm sure that food doesn't taste as good. But like, looking past Boydie, Andy Quinn, I know I tweeted on Monday after the game, Andy Quinn didn't put a foot wrong in that whole game. And Reggie came on here about a month ago and made the outrageous claim that Andy Quinn was basically Aaron O'Driscoll. Same type of player, same habits, same impact. Andy Quinn has probably been their most underrated player since he came into the team, I think, anyway.
He's done really well. He's been very, very solid. I think the only bad game he has was when he played right wing back, and he had a rough old day against Dundalk at home. But aside from that, he's done really well. A couple of people have asked, you know, surprised he hasn't played more. I think he had exams. Like, he hasn't been around a lot. Like, I remember when we were down in Sligo, literally teams were gone off the pitch after the warm-up, and seeing this kind of sweaty, discombobulated 6'3" fella coming in being like, where's the dressing room, what's going on? And I was like, there's Andy Quinn running across the pitch with his gear bag 5 minutes before kickoff. And we were a bit confused, like, did he miss the bus, did he get left behind? But yeah, he had exams, so that's why he hasn't been around as much in recent weeks. But when he has played, he's done really, really well. You can say he hasn't put a foot wrong. He's calm in possession. He's solid defensively. Like, he's good in the air. I think probably the comparisons to O'Driscoll are just physical and mannerisms. They both kind of move in a similar way, if that makes sense. But Shane Griffin kind of moves in that way as well. I think it's just players of that height and that kind of build look similar. But no, he's certainly looked more accomplished. He's certainly looked more to have more ability on the ball. And yeah, I think he's played really, really well.
Speaking of Griff, on the score sheet again, he started to turn into one of them players. He always just seems to have a knack of being in the right place, the right time in the box. He's very good for winning a flick on or for just keeping the ball alive in the box. But Griff's another one, like, I didn't envisage him being as important a player as he's been at the start of the season. I don't know whether I'm alone in that or whether you agree, but he's just been, he's been phenomenal. He's been a leader. He's stepped up when Luke hasn't been fully fit to play. He's so good on the ball. Defensively, he's just so solid. Very little gets around him. We're starting to turn into a real, we look a proper unit now. That back three, like obviously, Monday gone, it was Griff, it was Andy Quinn, it was Luke. Paddy Barrett is still to come back. Like, it's a strong, strong foundation for us to try and build on, really, isn't it? How important do you think that back three has been in all its different, all the different versions of it has been? How important has it been for us? And there, you'd have to call it good form.
Yeah, like it's our success is built on being the meanest defence in the league. There's no doubt about it. Anything we've done so far this year will be platformed by that. Like, Griff missed a good chunk of the start of the season. I don't think we, his first appearance was Paddy's Day. So what's that, you know, 6 weeks, 5 weeks of the start of the season. Came in against Cork away from home, came in cold, man of the match performance, absolutely brilliant. Match winner against UCD. Important goal the other night, a brilliant performance. He's been consistent, he's been clever, he's got the job done very, very well. You have to highlight him. He's very understated in the way he goes about things, but just such an important player. I think he has that kind of composure that you see other players when, you know, Luke Byrne is in the team. It seems like everyone just relaxes that wee bit more. I'm starting to see it from Griff. He is a leader, but he doesn't seem like a big talker. It seems like he just kind of does his business and lads follow. So he's been amazing. Like, to have Gav Malloy back as well, it's an option that you have in that back three. You'd hope you wouldn't need to use him in it, but he's played there before. He's played there and acquitted himself really, really well. So that's a positive one as well. Cameron Ledwidge is someone who is, when he's come in, his pace just causes absolute chaos. He's a sticky player as well. Like, he just, when he's marking, it just seems like, you know, he seems like a pain to play against. He's always on you. So I think that back three, whatever combinations played, it's not like last year where there were times where you're looking, you're like, oh, Jesus, I'm not so sure about this combo. I'd be a little bit worried tonight. You don't have that same kind of fear. Like, it seems to be that, I don't know what you call it, but they're not as lackadaisical last year or this year as they were last. Like, I remember up in Dalymount, the 1-1 draw, O'Driscoll just kind of, instead of going and putting his head through it, he just kind of flicked a little header on, hoping that someone at the back post would then welly it free. It just felt very casual. Like, they seem to be defending for their lives this year. Obviously, some of the set pieces aside.
I'd agree with that. I feel this year we're a bit of a meaner team. I don't know, that might be, like, I've mentioned this before, and about having bastards in the team, like people who are just, they can be nasty and they can just get the job done. I like your Boydies, your Paddy Barretts, your Mark Coyles. I just think we seem a bit tougher. We were a little bit soft last year at times, and that seems to be gone. We seem more assured. I wonder as well, how big a role does it being Duffer's second year have? Now, I'm sure he's saying things last year that were not right defensively, or shape, or trying to play out. And another person, and probably deserves a lot of credit for it. Well, definitely deserves a lot of credit, because any of the defenders you talk to all mention Joey O'Brien. Every single one of them has mentioned him at some stage, saying how important he is and how good he is and the level of information he's given. And just, not to get too jolly, but I just feel like we're in a very, very good place at the moment. I just hope that good place doesn't get disrupted by Matty Smith going to Love Island. What's the story there?
This is amazing. The Matty Smith rumour mill. I got a few emails this week from press in the Ireland and UK asking, was Matty Smith going on Love Island? And initially I thought it might have been a bit of a joke. I've seen it, I read it. I'm the same as yourself, but I was on holidays last week, so I came home flew home Monday, went to the game, and actually don't know. That's the truth.
It's interesting. It's very, in all seriousness, Matty Smith is not going to the Wild. As much as he probably looks like he could, he is not going onto Love Island. So I can definitely confirm that now. Dazzler, if you're sending one Shells player onto Love Island, who do you think it would suit the most?
Well, I got a few media requests this week asking who it was. I'd say a few players probably got a few messages as well. Last one was at them. Send one Shells player onto Love Island, who would I send? Current squad or all time?
Go all time first.
Ah, Shero. 100%.
Hell yeah.
Imagine Shero swanning into the Villa. We're just bleeding hit with my left foot and it just went in.
Just bleeding hit. So Shero's your nomination.
I just think Shero would bring a little bit of fun to the Villa. I was raging. Shero couldn't make the game. He was due to be on comms the other day, so credit to Andy McGowan who stepped in at short notice and did a brilliant job behind the mic alongside Adam Leonard. But Andy hasn't scored in any big games, so Shero was the man we wanted in the box that day, and he couldn't make it, but we hope to have Shero and Andy back. But yeah, I think Shero on Love Island would be a little bit of chaos. Stevie Williams, Welsh goalkeeper on Love Island.
Oh, well, I have to say, if I was nominating an all-time Shells player to go on to Love Island or any kind of dating show, what was the one Cilla Black used to host?
Blind Date?
Blind Date, yeah. Blind Date, I think I'd nominate Bobby Ryan.
Bobby Ryan?
Bobby Ryan, definitely. They're going down this route now, apparently, where they're looking for more normal-looking folk. So I'd probably stick with Bobby Ryan on that one. I have
Dude,
to say,
dude, you can't call him normal looking. That's just terrible.
It's the ultimate compliment.
It's the ultimate. Yeah, you're grand. Like fair play.
Yeah, you're grand. I would take grand. Absolutely no problem. Although, what's the phrase Duffer despises? And if he was called it, he would be deeply offended.
Nice.
That was the one. Yeah. Do not call Damien Duff nice.
I won't reveal the identity, but one player who was asked, was he going on Love Island, was deeply offended. I mean, he was even more offended when he told, you kind of have that Love Island look about you, you know? and he was like, what do you mean? So, yeah, I think if you look like you should be on Love Island, I don't think that's the compliment people intended to be. It's obviously, it's a great bit of fun for the league, as they say, the greatest league in the world. I have a meme that I would often send to some of the other lads on the media team. It's the Antonio Conte, just one normal day at Shelburne Football Club is all I ask. It'll never happen. And yeah, we've used it a few times this season. I'm sure we'll use it a few times before the end of the season.
Was Matty Smith the player who was told he looked like he'd be good for Love Island?
I'm sure someone told him he looked like he would be good for Love Island. I think Sean Boyd purposely wanted to get the tabloids hot on his heels. So he put up that story. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah.
But I think it was quickly deleted because, I don't know, it probably did look like he was leaving to go on to Love Island.
Oh, God. 5 minutes of Love Island speak. We'll be torn off the airways for this. Anyway,
when Shero goes on Senior Love Island, we'll have a special spin-off 1895 Island podcast.
Well, I did read something there a while back. They were looking at doing like a senior version of Love Island, like a senior dating program. Surely, no, I'm not. I can't say. I can't. No.
Who are you putting in the Villa? Brian Kerr, Pat Dolan, Joe Casey.
No.
The only show in town.
I'm going to dodge that completely because that will definitely get me in trouble.
Yeah.
Definitely. Moving swiftly on.
Swiftly along, right? Yeah. I sent you on that penalty graphic. Remember I was telling you that? You can see.
Yes.
I don't know if you see it. It's on your WhatsApp. But Brian Maher dived exactly where his last two penalties went. Like, exactly where. So, he got the trailing foot. He kept it out. But yeah, there's that. If you're a penalty taker in the League of Ireland, just fucking kick it somewhere else, because they know exactly where you put your last few. So
yeah, true. They've overestimated the crowd in the Brandywell as well there on the Isle Graphic.
Yeah. I use the old Opta to sound intelligent, but it's like when Homer wears a tie for Laddie.
That is what it is. That you, like, all that stuff about stats and people going on about, like, oh, they just, you can pull out any kind of nonsense stat now and people go mad over it. It's making not intelligent people sound intelligent. That's what I'd put it down to.
Will I give you one that'll make me sound intelligent? Oh. I probably should have given you 3 minutes ago, because I would have sounded intelligent. Shane Griffin attempted 81 passes in the game, the highest total for a Shelburne player in the division this season.
Oh, see, like, there's substance to that. Like, there is actually substance to that stat. It actually means something. Like, we obviously go through Shane Griffin an awful lot. We're obviously looking to play out an awful lot. Like, that is 100% a fair stat. I would love to see the stat on the amount of headers Freddie Draper has won, because I'd say he's up there at the highest in the league, because he is a handful, that lad. And I'd be surprised if he still withdrawed it come the summer. Be surprised if he doesn't end up back in pre-season with, isn't it, Lincoln, him and the other lad are on loan from. Speaking of transfer windows coming up, do you think we could be expecting any Reds business?
You think so. I think, like, last year was a bit of a mad year. Didn't Bose bring in like 10 or 11 players in the window?
Yeah, it was completely mental. And then they completely fell apart. Actually, before I had a point I was going to make earlier on about Drogheda, and that I reckon the pressure of that game got to them winning at half time because of the way the results had gone in the 5 o'clock games. And that was one of the funniest things I've seen in the League of Ireland Stadium, was the way that Cork and Bose game panned out. And I do not like Cork at all, not in the slightest. I have no time for Cork. They think they should be the capital city. They're a small village in Munster, and they always will be. But the way that game panned out was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it's always nice to see someone go from happiness to sadness very, very quickly. It's very, very funny to watch. Comedy in real time. And yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer bunch.
Very true. Moving on to this week, obviously Friday, we're home to Sligo. I watched most of the Sligo and Shamrock Rovers game on Monday, and Sligo are all over the shop. They're riddled with injuries at the moment. They're struggling for confidence. They just don't look very good. It's surely a really, really good chance for 3 points.
I think they're a poor side. I think if they didn't have Max Matta, they'd probably be fairly goosed. It's a weird one. It seems like when we played them down there, they're all over the shop. There was no one leading. I don't know if there's too many personalities, too many people from different parts of the world. There just doesn't seem to be any kind of cohesion. They don't feel like a team. They feel like, you know, 12, 13 very good players. Like, they're not bad. Like, you'd look at the squad and you think, yeah, they've way more about them than Drogheda. They've way more about them than UCD, way more about them than Cork, but they can't get a tune from them. I don't even think it's reflective of John Russell or whatever, because he seems like a very well thought out, well respected, people speak highly of him in the game. It just, I don't know what it is, but they seem all over the place, like you said.
And they need to be very, very careful with the way Cork have picked up a bit of momentum and Drogheda have kind of dropped off. They're only 2 points above that playoff spot, and the playoff spot last year was kind of like, ah yeah, sure, finishing a playoff spot, you know, you'd kind of fancy yourself in a playoff against a first division team. But the way that first division has gone, it's more likely going to be Waterford, and I would not fancy playing that Waterford team this year with the likes of a Keith Long in charge. I think whoever finishes second last is in major, major trouble this year as well. Hopefully now we've put enough of a cushion that we're just looking up rather than looking behind us. But it's kind of go either way. Team-wise on Friday, it's very difficult again. I mean, like, Mark Coyle came on and was brilliant. Boydie came on, was brilliant. Tariq, I thought, was very, very good when he came on. Evan Caffrey obviously came on, got a goal, was fantastic. How do you even go about starting to pick a team? Stick it into that Opta there and just let a fucking computer pick the team if I'm better off.
Yeah, to ChatGPT, give me an 11. Kyle Robinson as well is playing great. I mean,
yeah, Kyle's brilliant in Derry.
Yeah, and again, very, very unlucky. I'm sure if Opta could tell me how many players have hit the woodwork and not scored, he'd probably be the top one there for most times hitting the post or the crossbar without it going in. He's been great. I don't think Boydie's ready yet. I don't think he's quite there. Like, to get 45 minutes out of him the last day is serious going. Like, to go from, what was it, 15 up in the Daily Mount to 45, the guts of 45, is great.
I presumed really. That was to gear him up for Friday. That's kind of what, when I seen him coming on at halftime on Monday, I went, right, he had his cameo in Derry, or his, didn't he come on in Daily Mount as well?
He came on in Daily Mount, yeah.
And he came on in Derry. So he had his two kind of cameos there, got his 45 on Monday. I'd probably say he's set up perfectly now to start on Friday. I'd say to the uneducated eye, it seems like plenty of time to get him out there, to test out the injury. I know it's not quite that kind of injury, but to get him out in the grass, see how his lungs feel, see how the body feels. I would have thought he's perfectly set up now to play on Friday. I hope he does start, because he just gives us a totally different focal point going forward. And the lads who have played up there have been brilliant, but just think we're a different animal with Boydie. So you could see him starting on the bench again, could you?
I could, yeah. I could. But that said, right, Jack wasn't great the last day. Probably didn't have a whole heap of chances. Worked his socks off, has to be said. But probably he's a bit of a victim of his own success this year, where you're expecting Jack Moylan to be a match winner every week, and it's just not realistic. So it's a big game for him. Like, you know, the last time we played Sligo, it was the Jack Moylan show. Obviously a lot of talk around what he'll do with summer, end of season. Will he go? Will he not go? He won't be short on options here or abroad, but I could see him keeping his place, and I could see a big performance from him, because I think, you know, he's done well to, you know, respond to a quiet night with a good night. And like, even Doody, as he said when I think you interviewed him after one of the games, I think he scored two goals and he still wasn't happy with his performance. So it says a lot about the levels he's operating at, the standards he sets of himself. I'd expect Tariq to start. I think he did really well. Evan Caffrey coming off the bench did really, really well. Same as up in Daily Mount. I've no idea what team it's going to be.
It's mad, isn't it? Because it's at a stage now where you're having to play so well that there's absolutely zero chance the manager could possibly leave you out. That's kind of the way it's gotten to. Like, being a 6 out of 10 every week isn't enough anymore. It might have been last year, or it might have been under Morrow, but it's just not enough at the moment. The competition for places is rife. It's coming into that. It's a big, big time of the year now, because Europe starts soon. And this is the time of the year where if you can get a bit of momentum with the likes of like Dundalk, Pats, all in Europe, like it's a massive part of the season where you can get results together, get yourself up the table. Hopefully a couple of the other teams maybe go through a round, so they have to play extra games and their schedules get messed up and they're playing Sundays and all that kind of stuff. It's just such a huge part of the season. And I think we're coming together at a really good time as well. But like you, it's next to impossible to predict a team. Like, Evan was so... Mark Coyle, I thought, was brilliant when he came on. He's just... Something about Mark Coyle... Mark Coyle could end up being my Dave Crawley in years to come, where it's just something about him that can't put my finger on it. He's good at everything, similar to Gab Malloy. He can do a little bit of everything. He's hard on a sleeve type player. He's a very, very nice bloke, which makes it an awful lot easier, although he doesn't like getting his runners dirty in Talca. But it's mad. I literally have the team from Monday in front of me, and I have the bench from Monday in front of me, and I just cannot possibly pick a team. Like, the people that started on Monday that I there's just no chance I could see them getting dropped, would be Conor Cairns, probably Griff, and Luke, once Luke's 100% fit. Like, after that, anybody could really drop out of the team. Like, Gav Malloy could easily come out for Mark Coyle or Brian McManus, and I wouldn't be surprised. JJ, likewise. Like, Evan Caffrey could come in for any of those two, or could possibly play as one of the attackers. Cam could easily start. Like, it's just... it's mental. It's good mental, though. It's definitely nice to have that bit of uncertainty this year.
Yeah, Brian McManus came on, did well too. So, like, it's hard to know what we're going to see. You do expect bodies will probably come in the summer, and that'll make it even trickier. But yeah, it's a good position to be in. I remember the manager saying that last year they'd have their team selection meeting with the coaching staff, and it wasn't really a meeting. It was more so, we all know who the 11 are. We all know the only sub we can bring on here. And obviously now there's probably more robust discussions and game management, and you could definitely look at the team pick for Derry, and there's probably an eye on a team good enough to get 3 points on Friday, but also with enough going into Monday to be fresh, so you don't have that kind of Friday-Monday hangover. You'd expect maybe Mark Coyle could be involved. Robinson didn't come off the bench the last day, so could we see him in from the start? I'd like to see us with the twin towers of terror, Robinson and Boyd up front, and just lump balls in and see what happens.
The League of Ireland will get pulled into some kind of chasm with two strikers playing, and then those two boys, they'd end up lumping the head off each other, I'd say. More likely than that, else. Two, like the Bash brothers out leading the Mighty Ducks, they'd be like, I'd love to see. If the manager has any respect for the 1895 podcast, he will at some stage in the season play Kyle Robinson and Sean Boyd up front together. Just, if for nothing else, just for the crack.
I think it'd be great crack. I think it'd be very, very entertaining. I think it'd be an absolute defender. Imagine, like, as a defender, going to bed being like, oh, Kyle Robinson and Sean Boyd tomorrow, please, no. And then Matty Smith and Jack Moylan too. He gets stick when he says it, but like, he's not wrong when he says that, like, some of the attacking players we have, other teams would fear them. They would not look forward to playing against them. You know? People won't fancy it.
No, they will not. Speaking of people not fancying things, the cup draw threw out a very interesting first round tie for the Reds. Obviously, away to Bowes. It's in Dalymount. As a man who hates the cup, what did you make of the draw?
Can I just stop you there? I love the cup.
Yeah, of course you do.
When the cup was haunted and cursed, it didn't like the cup.
No, hang on a second. I'm calling out your bullshit now. You were going to say, your whole argument for the cup, you hated it because it was cursed, right? I never accepted that point, but I could at least see where you were coming from. How could it be less haunted now that we got beat 4-0 in the final?
Record defeat in the final. Maybe it is still haunted.
Yes, it's more haunted now than it ever was before, surely. Just because we got to have a great night out doesn't, you know, make it any less haunted.
Correction, we got two great nights out.
Well, true, yeah. Very true.
The cup, when you're in the first division and you're trying to get up, like, I think the cup got us relegated in 2020. I genuinely do. I think after we got beaten by Athlone 4-1, the team was a beaten docket. They were dead and buried. There was no hope of doing anything. Then 2021, what did we go to UCD in the second round?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, like it, but it always felt like it was a competition that didn't suit us. Like, it's just so long since we'd had any kind of joy in it. Even when you look at the 2011 final, like, to lose a cup final in that manner, it just felt like you're not meant to win that competition. We were robbed in many, many ways in 2011. And yeah, but I'm okay with the cup. I resigned myself to what will be, and just try and enjoy it. I hope it's no longer haunted or cursed. Maybe it still is.
Quite possibly might be. But, you know, it's something on that cup draw that I can't wrap my head around. Why people were saying, oh, no, that's a brutal draw. I think it's a great draw. And I said this to you in the group chat already. The reason I think it's a great draw is because it's the first round. So if you win the game and you put them out of the cup, the golden that you could do would just be unbelievable. If we're beaten, which I don't think we will be, but if we're beaten in the first round, it's the first round. Like, yeah, Grant, no major heartbreak. This is a very Shells thing to say. I would rather lose to them in the first round than in the semi-final.
I don't think so. I'd rather lose in the semi-final because at least you'll have...
No way. No. You wouldn't even enjoy the build-up to a semi-final against them. Well, I wouldn't.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't.
Too much at stake.
But to be fair, they've got very quiet since that Keane Levy goal and the whole, you know, Tolka Gate thing. We're here to take over your stadium. Like, it's one of those draws where no one seemed particularly pleased with it. Like, I saw some of their response to it was like, oh, Jesus, not them, anyone but them. We're out of the cup. So, it's refreshing that it's going to be a proper cup tie in the first round. I see people try to talk down, you know, the rivalry between the clubs. I can't understand it. Like, it's... We're trying to sell ourselves. We're trying to push the league forward. The league is built on these rivalries. Like, in the start of the noughties, I guess, when Stephen Kenny was there and Nutsy was here, there was proper, proper edge and needle, even in 2006. Although they weren't the power that they would be a few years later, there was still a proper needle there. So I never understand why some people try to think there's only one derby and it's Rovers and Bows. There's not, you know. The league exists outside Daly Mount and Tallaght.
It does. It most certainly does. Dazzler, a score prediction for Friday, please.
And then John Daly, the most boring priest in Ireland. There's no rivalry between them.
I mean, genuinely, look, they've done okay since he's taken over, but, oh, no, I would rather listen to Mass than listen to him in a dressing room. Jesus, he's the most boring man I've ever seen in my life. And you know what else? That it's something that I would be quite picky on. He looks ridiculous on the touchline because he's wearing those tight coaching buttons, for want of a better word, and they're too loose, and he looks like an 80-year-old man. So I had to get that out. I noticed that the other day and I went, jeez, look at the state of him on that touchline. But we can't finish the pod off with Rovers, Bowls and Pat's talk. Give me a prediction for Friday.
A prediction for Friday, I think Shells will win. I think Shells will win comfortably enough. I think 2-0 Reds.
And give me a prediction for Saturday, the home game at Wexford.
I think it'll be a proper test. I think it'll be a tight game, but I think we're playing very, very well at the moment. Game to Piemont aside, which is a narrow defeat, we are the meanest defence in the league. We've conceded, what, 6 goals all season. I think the table doesn't really tell the truth of how well we've been playing. The games we've lost have been narrow. I think we'll have too much for them, especially at home. I'm going 3-0 Reds.
Oh, so am I. I'm going back-to-back 3-0s. I'm going 3-0 Saturday, 3-0 Friday.
That's 6 points, 6-goal weekend. Woo.
Yes, that's my spoof, and I'm sticking with it. Dazzler, thank you very much for giving up your evening.
Duty, it is a pleasure, and welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed Disneyland, and I hope you'll never leave again, because after you left, some crazy stuff happened. Everyone's saying Matty Smith is going on Love Island.
No, Matty Smith's not going on Love Island. He's definitely not going on Love Island. I can confirm it. Is another handsome person from the league on Love Island? Yes.
Well, I tell you who before Red Sail starts.
Right, go on, who is it?
Exclusively reveal on Love Island for the 2023 season, repping the Reds, is the one and only.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the sunset. One.